Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Monday stream, otherwise known as Evelyn's Corner.
Yes.
This is her show, so I am technically the co-host.
Yes, you are. But thank you for introducing me. And what we're up to this evening, I suppose.
Yes.
I suppose we'll do the usual thanking people that show up and those that are members and like and comment and share. And when people ask questions about, oh, where can I go learn about this stuff? And people post the links, I quite enjoy that. When I see it in the wild, sometimes it's a nice thing to see. So please do more of it. It reminds us to keep doing this.
Yes, it does. Plus, like I said, a lot of people have asked us for this, so this will be a good
Yes.
future resource, even if everyone can't catch it live. I'm currently trying to. I've got a Google Doc of a lot of the stuff together. What I'll do is, at the end of this, I'll put a very large pinned comment. It may or may not link to a community post, depending on how long it'll let the comment be. But I'll try and give a decent list of the stuff we go through, just so you can look it up yourselves, and anything that seems interesting you can remember as reference. So I'll try and make sure that it is in the community section and it is the pinned comment here. So if you miss bits of it, or you don't hear a book, or you're not quite sure what book we're talking about, it will be down below. So do look out for that. I'm hoping to make this a decent, like I said, reference resource for people, because there's a huge amount of the DMs I get, and the stuff people talk to me in voice chat about when I'm in random voice chats who watch the content is, what do you want me to, what do you recommend I read on this? What do you recommend I read on that?
Yeah.
What are you reading currently? So it's, I think this will serve a very, very good kind of niche for people to be able to go through and just look at the things that we're reading. Because you'll notice in the thumbnail, you'll see bits and pieces there, but not all of it's
I suppose
legible.
I'll put it over into the full picture. 'Cause I think it's like not to brag at all, but I don't know, I feel like it's a somewhat minorly impressive achievement to have a library full of quite a variety of books, albeit not an especially big one at all, that I've
No,
actually
this.
read a good portion of.
Well, this is mostly our political research library from the last few years. We have another bookshelf full of like general books. Like I do own things like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and fiction, some more normal history, more normie books, as well as a lot of quite a few engineering and science books and general reference guides for
Normie
mathematics and things
books,
like
what are
that.
those?
Well, I do have a very lofty sounding book called Metallurgy in the Service of Man, which
Yes.
is actually one of my favorites. It's actually a very good book. I learned a lot from that. Old style kind of late early 80s metallurgy reference guide. But that's not what you guys are here for, really. You're here for our quote unquote beast bookshelf. Yes, good morning and good day, friends
There
in
is also
chat.
some, I don't know, there is some oddball picks in there which we can go through, because I don't know,
There is
some of them are
some.
entertaining and some of them are so schizo that people might not believe as if we told them what the contents of them were.
If we could have a copy of We the Scythians, we would do.
Yeah.
But they are basically impossible. I don't. Nobody even really knows if it was physically printed. That's the kind of book that is. So we do have some very skit stuff in here. I don't know, but we'll do a zoom in on each section, I think. I
Well,
think.
I was about to ask you, where should we start?
I think we'll just start with the Austrian stuff. I think that's what.
I believe
Oh, we
that
do.
is
Oh,
this image.
actually, is do we have Dugin in, do we have fourth political theory in that image?
Yes, it's over on Jess's side, which we'll get to.
Yes, we do have Age of Slaanesh. We do have Age of Slaanesh. I know. We do have a copy of fourth political theory. Although I guess we can talk about that because he posted it. We have actually done a bit of a Q&A with Dugan. We both managed to ask him a question during a Zoom call, so that was kind of interesting.
Exposed them as a, not exposed them, that's maybe too harsh, but essentially asked him if he was a race realist and he said no.
He is a dirty, dirty Civ Knight in some ways, which is kind of funny. Zoom in, I'd say bottom row we can start with.
Yep. Oop. We it's too much of a, I'll tell you what, I'll use the actual zoom thing and not the. There we
Yeah.
go. That should be viewable by people, I would think.
Yeah. He is quite an interesting fellow, yes, but We'll have a look at the bottom row here, because we have quite a lot of well, your Rothbard I think is in the other section. We'll get to that in a
Yes, because
sec.
they're all in the easy reader format, except from the one there. Some of these are a bit clipped at the top, but it's all right because I know them. There
We
is
can
a
go back up as well, so.
yeah. No, egalitarianism as a revolt against nature, which is actually quite hard to get a hold of. So that one's actually from the Mises Institute. That's the one I got with a hoodie, because I ordered some stuff to my grandparents when they were in Boston, and then they brought the box back
Oh,
over. But
how
no,
lovely, how awesome.
I think a lot of the texts, especially in this section and the section next to it on the sort of mid-level, will be ones people will recognize if they've watched a lot of democratization. So I suppose
Yes.
from, I'll use the weed pointer, from right to left, we've got Liberty or Equality by Eric Ritter von Kühnelt-Leyden, which is
Yes.
a great pairing with Democracy, the God That Failed, Popper, which is the heavy theory-based book using Austrian economics to look at the political economy of a monarchy compared to the feudal society and compared to modern democracy, which is something we went to great lengths to do, and why it's really nice to have something that's almost sits as a secondary source, where Kühnelt-Leyden is talking about sort of wider aspects of politics in relation to religion and the development from sort of the Catholic scholastic tradition into the monarchies that Hoppe's talking about, and the more Protestant traditions that he suggests come into fruition as the sort of more democratic regimes in Europe, as it were.
I can actually give people a free copy of that book in the chat as well. A lot of the Mises stuff is in the Mises Library, and it is just available for free. They just not many the elites don't want you to know this, but the literature from the Mises Institute is free. They just give you PDFs of it. I myself have dozens of Mises books on EPUB and PDF because of that.
And between the two of those, that we have a Theory of Socialism and Capitalism, which was the first Hoppe book I read. So I read that one, then that one, after I had previously read the big standout one in this role, which I think I suppose is Human Action by Mises, which is a task that everyone should take on at some point.
Is a hefty tome, yes.
Yes.
Human Action is a very hefty tome, but it is a good basis for people. It's funny because it's also a lot of people, especially the empiricoids, as we call them, actually consider Human Action stuff like pseudoscience because
Yes.
they don't understand the difference between like philosophy. And the study of human beings and like mathematics, they don't understand that distinction, and they think that economics is just like purely equations. They don't
Yes.
understand it. It's the study of human action.
What do you mean
So,
it's not maths?
economics is not just maths.
Then I suppose I should try and go as sort of right to left as we can. We've got The Great Fiction by Hoppe, which is a collection of a lot of his work, really, over the last like 30 odd years nearly.
Yes, we did used to have a cute little copy. It's contained in that whole book. We just have a cute little copy of From Aristocracy to Monarchy to Democracy, but it ended up getting covered in Guinness Porter,
Yes,
unfortunately,
unfortunately.
because one burst in Jess's bag, poor dear, and that got completely soaked.
But yeah, if you have read A Theory of Socialism and Capitalism and you've read Democracy and you're itching for more technical stuff from Hoppe and more wider reaching subjects, where he's almost kind of talking about anthropology and sort of taking the homesteading principle all the way back to the hunter-gatherer society, and actually trying to use praxeology, or the study of human action, to decipher how these sort of concepts have come about. And a lot of that allows him to give you sort of context, especially if you want to go right down into the weeds of Austrian economics. You begin to get into things like argumentation ethics, which is very interesting, but for the most part completely useless. However, once you grasp it gives you like, well, this is the very intuition. It gives us intuition, like this kind of stuff. So it's almost metaphysical in a certain way. It's kind of weird.
Some of it is, yes. Another question in chat asking about Dostoevsky. I actually have some in storage. I have some books that are actually in storage in my cupboard and at my mum's house. Like I said, this is our more recent literature, though. This is most of the literature we've used to research a lot of our series. So this is a very specific book collection. This is not actually our general book collection.
I think most as I think Jess has some Dostoevsky on her side,
Oh, does she?
but we'll get to
Okay.
that.
Oh,
No,
yes, in both cases, then.
next book after that is Higgs, Crisis and Leviathan, which I think both me and you via essays and PDFs have basically read to death for bits and
I just wanted
pieces.
a physical copy of it because I've had a digital copy of it. It's actually the first book out of all of these, I think, that I read. It was handed to me from God knows where years ago. And it's an excellent book. And it
Probably
has a lot of
Radlib reached out of the shadows many years ago and said, "Read this."
possibly we have been in like each other's orbit for an extended amount of time without fully realizing
I
it,
remember as well,
which
is
is
this not quite a, is this not like a 25-year anniversary edition or something as well? It's got a
yes, it
nice covered
is.
one.
Yes, it's a very I got this. This is like an ex-library one. A lot of them are actually. We've noticed in our book collecting travels recently that libraries are getting shut of most of this stuff, like completely. Libraries are locking down what they carry. You'll be very hard pressed to find a lot of this stuff in the wild anymore. In fact, we have a lot of this stuff comes from like Liberty Press and people like that, or what are they called? Liberty Fund, and a lot of the what I would consider the activist printers. The people I know you encountered that with the people who were printing Elul were doing it basically for activist purposes and trying to get more accurate translations out there. The Mises Institute does it obviously as kind of activist printing, and this stuff has really been completely shut out of the market, the conversation, and it is not really available in libraries, the library,
Libraries are very tasty.
libraries full of knowledge.
I was gonna think there was a full of the sort of materials you would use to dry concrete.
But it's yeah, you have to go out and seek most of this stuff, and it's odd. I think I've talked about it before, but there's a book recycling kind of recycling service I use called Better World Books, which gets a lot of ex-library stuff.
It's a big aggregator. I think it also
Yes.
gets you ABE books in there as well, which is in and of itself
Yes.
like a secondhand bookstore aggregator. But I think the what's nice about I will say what's nice about a lot of the Mises Institute stuff is you can go out and get it, as with the Liberty Fund stuff as well. So it's not unlike some of the other books that we'll come across as we go through this. They're not too much of a pain to get a hold of. I think what the
No.
I'll quickly go back to it because I did skip it. Bureaucracy by Ludwig von Mises, which is just a little shorthand thing. He's talking about the sort of, in a very kind of niche way, like some of the political economy aspects of bureaucratic management as compared to entrepreneurial management. And it's kind of one of those things that, like, if only he'd read The Managerial Revolution and then gone and written that,
Yes.
it'd be a completely different book. But it's somewhat interesting. We have Patrick Newman's Cronyism, Liberty versus Power in Early America. Or sorry, Cronyism that colon Liberty versus Power in Early America. I've listened to some of the Liberty versus Power podcasts. Some of those have been pretty good. And I think
From what I've read of the PDF that I've got, it's a very interesting book and good piece of reference material.
yes, well, it's all again, a lot of it is material from Mises U lectures as well. And
Yes.
speeches and stuff he had given prior to it. I assume there's other material in there as well. Again, it's one I've only really picked through. And then we come to two that I think you would be more familiar with. I will probably try and read before the end of the year. But we have On Power by Bertrand Duvanel and his other book, Sovereignty.
Yes. Well, we also, I'm not sure if we have it in the other section as well. In one of the other bits, there is also a pure theory of politics.
Yes, and I think there's also the problems of socialist England, but we'll get around there.
We have the Juvenile trilogy plus like a random book from 1949 that I found, which is The Problems of Socialist England. The Juvenile trilogy is very vital. The Juvenilian model of studying power, studying sovereignty, studying politics is very, very useful and fits extremely well with the Plato and Mosca stuff. I don't think we actually have any Mosca because it's like hen's teeth. But we do have some Plato, And that does fit in very well with the Elite Theory stuff. It actually fits in very well with a lot of the Burnham stuff that you talked about there as well. All of this is very complementary. I think a lot of it also that goes to its logical conclusion. I was actually rewatching AA's, problems with libertarianism stuff, and he talks about how in a theory of socialism and capitalism, some of the points that Hopper makes are actually different than he makes in the later essays of The Great Fiction, because he
Yes.
seems to have come around to a much more power-based analysis of the world. In fact, one of the later essays in The Great Fiction is him basically a dick slapping libertarians and telling them the Ten Commandments are better than the Nap.
Yeah, well, that's if people want to go back and watch that, that's I think I talked about the first half of that essay on my own and talked through the latter half about the Ten Commandments with Nunes not too long.
Yes, that was a rather good stream. But yeah, we do have two of the Juveniles trilogy there. I don't think the third one is somewhere else, and we can't really. I don't think it actually fits on that shelf. It's quite tall, I think, a pure theory of politics. But
No,
that's the.
it's a thin one that's over on the other side, I believe.
Okay, we'll get to it when we get to it. God,
Next
what book is?
one we have is the Michael Lind, The New Class War, which we neither of us have really read properly yet, but as we found it essentially advertised to us in some place as like a like Normicon version of Leviathan and Its Enemies.
No, well, yeah, Michael Lind is one of the people who was involved in throwing Samuel T. Francis, who we'll get to, under the bus. And this book came to my attention because one, funnily enough, I looked it up and it hasn't sold very well. You can get discount copies for like 3 quid on eBay, which is what I did with this. And two, there was a scathing review of it from Pedro Gonzalez at Chronicles magazine, basically going through Michael Lind, how he tried to destroy Samuel Francis, whilst also ripping him off and ripping off his points in this book. So it's just kind of I wanted to see how bad it was, and it was pretty cheap. It's basically Leviathan and Its Enemies, but SJW YouTubified,
Ooh.
almost. Yeah.
Next to that, we have both of Alexander Adams's books, which he very kindly gave to us
Yes,
for
after
talking at Nomos,
yes,
because
he was at Nomos
he said he
Birmingham. He
would
did
give us a
rather well.
copy, and he gave us a
Yes.
lovely little handwritten note with them as well, which was a nice little touch. I have to admit, I haven't read these yet. As far as I'm aware, the culture war one or the iconoclasm one was his speech at Shieldings last year.
I think it was the culture war one, possibly. I'm not entirely sure though. Well, it's not just his speeches, everyone's expanded
No,
from it,
of
but.
course it's expanded on, but I think that was the general idea he was talking about. Then next to that we have Nina Pavarotti's The Populist Delusion, which we did a whole stream on, or not a whole stream, but half a stream on at one point. If people want to go
Yes.
and get some thoughts on that, there is the book We Never Shut Up About, that's Nemesis, the Juvenalian versus the Liberal Model of Human Orders, I think is the title in full, by C.A. Bond, which
Yes,
is,
it is.
if you
It's a
can
very
find
good
it,
piece of
buy it
speculative.
and read it and absorb the general sort of assumption which he's trying to put forward, which is power, politics is politics, and liberalism is just a fantasy, or is always the way in which leaders delude people into
Yeah,
falling for their
G.C. Mitt
fantasy.
says, and no one seems to be able to. Yeah, it seems to be bloody expensive. We keep teasing people with Nemesis because it's basically an impossible book and will
I
probably be
should have
worth
bought more
thousands.
copies.
I'm going to say it'll probably be worth thousands of pounds one day. Because it is very important. It's a lot of people didn't seem to understand it when it first came out. It is a piece of secondary literature about the juvenile. If people don't understand what secondary literature is, then they need to go back to fucking school. I'm sorry, that is very basic. But yeah, it's a piece of secondary literature about juvenile. But next to it, we do have the Machiavellians.
Yes, by Burnham, which is, I think, definitely one of the books we would put a priority on.
Yes.
The whole combo, or the combo of the Managerial Revolution, Machiavellians, is a great way into understanding a large amount of everything we've talked about in a lot of ways, and I think possibly some of the best summarizations of what are the developments you need to have in your thought as a right winger to actually understand the way politics works in the modern world.
There were people asking about the elite theory stuff. There is a condensed version of Mind and Society, which is quite useful, but I can't seem to find that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to try and get a hold of the collection, or the at least Mosca's A Ruling Class, and the volumes of Pareto's Mind and Society at some point, but maybe that's one for saving up all the YouTube pennies for at the end of the year.
Yeah, we have struggled to find those, John.
I mean, there are ones for sale. It's just that we're not, you know, as if you're going to offset or try, you know, offload 100-odd quid on a book or a serialized set of books, you want to know you're getting good ones and not just buying like crap reprints. Which is alright if you want to buy a cheap one just for the necessity of it, but I think if I really wanted to fully absorb Mosca and Pareto's work, I would need to read it in a book form properly.
There is a condensed version which AA recommends called the Compendium of General Sociology, but it is either available in Italian or it is literally £1,000. So paperbacks of it start about 85 quid.
Is that for the Italian ones?
Yeah. Good luck.
Well, just buy that in an Italian dictionary and I'll learn Italian then.
Yeah, say the Compendium of General Sociology, if you can find it, is the one. There's a lot of versions of Mind and Society Part 1 knocking around. We're ruining some of the future of this bits of the shelf, but there's lots of Part 1 knocking around, but a lot of them are shit.
Yeah, the one we've got's not the best.
No, that was very cheap, though. You can get low-quality prints, but be prepared for them to be low quality.
We shall carry on.
Yes.
At the end of the row there is Lenin's One Step Forward, Two Steps Back, which is a copy I bought for all of about 80 pence. When I was in Stirling, there was a great Oxfam charity bookshop. And because it was in a uni town, as some of the other things you will find as we go through here and some of the more rarer, older stuff, you just find in there. And because it's all weirdos, they don't go digging through like the political theory stuff. So there's just loads of like old, I mean, that last time we were there and grabbed some books that people have seen a bit, there was what, like a 4 or 6 volume hardback set of Nietzsche in German.
Yeah.
Obviously not much use to us, but interesting that it's there. I credit this book, to be honest, with starting my fascination with Lenin, because I was listening to PQ podcast ages and ages, this be a couple of years ago now at least, and he had a guy on called Aaron, who I've introduced you to in some sort of ways on Twitter and also through PQ's shows. He's immensely entertaining and quite funny, is completely retarded, but then comes out with utter genius sometimes, and started like doing the whole ironic Leninism thing, and I didn't quite get it, and then I picked that up and read it for a laugh, and I got about 5 or 6 pages in, and all of a sudden he starts just lamenting about, like, oh god, the bloody internationalists are at it again, and saying we need to have a global revolution. No, we just need a revolution in Russia and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, so true, King. It becomes so relatable that you can see just the pure problems of politics, regardless of ideas and ideology, and, you know, all of that, strip that away from it and just look at it purely what needs to be done, what must be done in a certain sense.
What must be done, yes.
Yeah, it becomes very insightful, very interesting.
Well, it's a lot of Lenin isn't actually about political theory, it's about power.
Yes.
Which is what makes it universal. But we'll get to some of that at some point. Someone mentioned Wyndham Lewis. We'll get to Wyndham Lewis later as well. We do have some Wyndham Lewis on the shelf. Zooming in maybe a teeny bit more.
On this one? Yeah, can do.
Yeah, just to give it a quick scroll.
So on this end, we've got the Reverend Robert Taylor's The Devil's Pulpit, which I was actually surprised that I was able to find. I think I got that for less than 18 quid, and it's a really nice quality hardback. But I think the long and the short of trying to explain it to people is that it's part of a set of theories that I would refer to as astrotheology, which attempts to suggest that a lot of religious and spiritual belief are centered entirely around different derivations of myths, either around the sun or of the astrological figures. And that if you then apply a lot of the mathematics of astrology, which I know people poo-poo, to it, you
Is it like the astrology of the ancient world, in the religious astrology,
the
not
Kali
the
Yuga math stuff, basically. Yeah. If you apply a lot of that to it and you starting to pick apart bits of the stories in the Bible and stuff, it gets very interesting because he has this, I think this is from the 1830s or the 1840s, and it's all written transcripts of his sermons that he gave, you know, just by rote, just the stuff he knew. And he's talking in this tone where the people who wrote the Bible are basically taking the piss out of you, because Jesus being born in the stable and what is Christmas now, but would have been the 25th of November before then because of the shift in the stars and planet alignment and all this kind of stuff. You know, it's the stable because it's at the time at which, is it Sagittarius, the horse, comes over the horizon, and that's why it's the stable. And he's saying, you know, like, if you then put these things together,
it's very skits.
It's almost like they're like taking the piss out of you by leaving you all the hints there, but not explaining to you the understanding of all the different astrological myths that's
there's
put through
also
all of it.
He's very skits in some of the delivery, but it also gets into a lot of the pulling on older myths, which pull on older myth stuff.
Mm.
And a lot of that does derive from people's stories about the stars.
Yes.
So it's an interesting read, if nothing else.
Yeah, then we've got, this is one you picked up, I think quite cheap as well, didn't you? Mercia Elades, The Sacred and the Profane, which is just a nice little book about him explaining, you know, in the ancient world and the religious world where there was sacred aspects to life.
Yeah.
How were they treated? How were they constructed? You know, what was and wasn't sacred? So there was sacred time and profane time. There were sacred places and profane places. And he also then talks about even within places, within spaces. So in a sacred place, there could be an even more sacred space within that, and that's how you end up building to things like that. Something like Solomon's Temple or something like that, that has these higher levels of initiation and more sacred sort of elements around different chambers and different spaces that are in some way ordained from one another.
It's also been quite rightly described as a decent companion if you're reading Evola.
Yes, I can see that actually, because now that I'm reading one of the books that's not here, which is Evola's Eros and the Mysteries of Love, the Metaphysics of Sex, which is actually very interesting. He references Elade and that a few times. I think I briefly talked to Thomas 77 on Telegram at one point. He was recommending a lot of different Elade. I think is it the History of Religions or something? The History of the Eternal Return, he says, is one to have a look at, or the Myth of the Eternal Return or something. So I'm very interested in that.
I thought you were going to say the Myth of the Eternal Retard then.
No,
that's just us.
Eros is just I was going to say Eros is quite interesting though. I like when he BTFOs Schopenhauer quite heavily by essentially quoting Schopenhauer verbatim. So he goes on to talk a little bit about, you know, like, well, why do we love? Why do we have intimate, you know, behaviors? Why do we get pleasure from sex? And why are we aware of that? And all these different things. And he tries to build this idea of this sort of sense of eros or energy, the thing that drives either men or both men and women, depending on whether you want to look at it from a unity or duality or dyad perspective or whatever. He goes through explaining all this stuff and then says, well, the theories of, you know, Schopenhauer, which are further derived from Darwin, which says that, you know, the essential end of sex is procreation. So he has to then explain that love, intimacy, you know, romantic pleasure are not real feelings, but they are the genus of the species orientating themselves in a demonic form of either the woman or the man, you know, whoever it is appropriate to yourself, to fill you into essentially spilling your seed and procreating. I think it's like hilarious. I mean, it's literally Schopenhauer's quoted verbatim in there.
It's just Evola kind of like flexing, and it flashes on screen, this is what Schopenhauer actually believes.
Yeah.
But next to Next to Elaine, we have a very interesting book which you brought with you. You've had for quite a decent amount of
Yes, this
time.
is another one of my Oxfam charity bookshop finds. I think
Very
it's
great find.
from, yes, I think it's a first edition translation of Paolo Manelli's Mussolini and Intimate Life. Now, if you look the book up, you'll get an intimate biography and different names for it. So I can't tell you which editions to go for if you're going to look for them online. If you can find this, a black hardcover one that's from about 54, seems to be the one I have. It's a great read. And it's honestly like a massive red pill on fascism because Mussolini is portrayed to you by an actual Italian who was there in the period, who wasn't necessarily sympathetic to fascism, but understood Mussolini as like a human being who came from the same country that he did, had the same influence as he did. You know, he talks about his youth growing up poor or working in schools and all this different stuff and joining syndicalist groups, and it's so strange to me that a book like that humanizes someone we are supposed to hate in all forms can actually be readily available and you don't get in trouble for reading it.
It's generally just a good historical book. It's also one of those magical books that was written probably pre-1950, and so it has.
Yeah, I think it'd probably been written post, and just before probably about the 49, 48, something like that. I'm not too sure. But yeah, that's.
Mussolini is my favorite type of pasta.
But no, I was quite chuffed. I think I picked that up for about £2. Next to it, we'll stick on the theme of Italians, is probably one of the better books to read if you want an introduction to Evola. The Bow and the Club, because within it he talks about a wide variety of subjects, and some of them are very, very spicy. And it's one of those ones that you either pick that up, read it, and go, "Oh, I need more of this," or you pick it up, read half of it, and go, "Ugh, this isn't for me." So, if, I don't know, if people want to dip their toe into Evola and see if it's for them, it's definitely a book I would recommend. Next to that, we have one that you found, which has a fantastic looking cover. I should have taken a separate picture of because we're now into the Ulul section.
We are into the Ulul
But
section,
it's like
yes.
violence, and it says it loads of different times and different gradings and opacity and
Yeah.
stuff like that. It's an extremely sort of 70s design.
Another one of my ex-library finds, I think. But yeah, it's as you've said, you've read it. I have not read Violence, actually. It's more on his Christian side,
Yes,
since
it's like
Ulul is a Christian author as well.
a sort of theological study kind of thing. I think if someone was writing essays specifically to like a Christian in-group, it would maybe be a useful reference material. Next to it though, or the next two books to it though, I think are the main things everyone knows Ulul for, which are Propaganda and the Technological Society. Which, if read in Technological Society and in Propaganda, and that, I think you could probably read them in either order, really. It wouldn't make much of a difference, I suppose. But the two of them fit together amazingly. And
Yes.
in a certain sense, Propaganda is almost, it's like an addendum or an extra extension onto Technological Society that explains how elites get away with creating technological society in a certain way. And I think if you read it like that, you begin to see that Ulul, even though he's not really championed as such, is definitely someone that understood elitism and was by no means an
Yes.
egalitarian.
Well, Ulul is a Christian anarchist, really. He's in this weird space where he comes to these conclusions from a theological, and he's a very particular kind of anarchist, though. He's almost the same kind of anarchist someone like Hopper is in many ways, which is extremely interesting. He comes to a lot of the same conclusions and describes a lot of the same phenomena earlier on, really, in the time period. Than Hopper does, but it's interesting. He has a very different way of phrasing things. I've shown a few people bits from Propaganda, and it's taken them a little while to get them, some of the people I've chatted to, but then they do, and it's like they see the Matrix. It's hilarious.
Well, I think he's
That
also
bit.
very incredibly well read. I mean, he
Yes.
references Carlyle. He was reading Burnham in the late 40s, early 50s. So he was, right there. at part of that kind of scene, because he references the managerial revolution and the, I think possibly in both technological society and propaganda,
Yes,
in at least one of them anyway.
for those wondering, the Elul is nice and cheap right now, people are saying. Yes, he is. It's drying up though, because these were put out by a guy called David Gill, if I remember correctly, who is like an Elul super fan and wants to keep his stuff in print in English. So if you want some Elul, it's already gone up in price. The Politics of God and Politics of Man has gone from being like 10 quid to being like 16 quid. Technological society is still relatively cheap, and so is propaganda. But there's
Well,
more I
see,
want to get.
it's kind of like, it's funny you think that Lul wrote something like on the order of 50 different works. And I think there was only maybe been about half a dozen, a dozen have been the most translated at any one time. So there's, apologies, there's so much more out there of him to read that I can't imagine what the rest of it's like if he's, you know, if there was stuff that came after propaganda that's of that ilk, it must be great.
Some of it is, some of it isn't. I'm looking to get stuff like Anarchy and Christianity might be interesting.
I
The
think
Subversion of Christianity sounds like an
Humiliation
interesting
of the
book.
Word, I think, is one we need to get into at one point, though.
Yes. There's just nice, I guess, more Bible study stuff as well. I've been recommended Hope in the Time of Abandonment as more of a Bible-based book. So if you're interested in more of the Christian side of Elul, there is a lot to go at there.
Yeah, because we have one next to it. That was one my mum actually got me for Christmas. The Politics of God and the Politics of Man.
I'd say if you're going to get any Elul books, get Technological Society and Propaganda. And Politics of God and Politics of Man is good as well, but I'd say that Technological Society and Propaganda are the two most vital ones, but have a look round. Asking in chat there, GC Mitt, and just look what you find interesting, because you can get them right now and that won't last forever. But yeah, Technological Society and Propaganda are the two most vital ones, I would say.
But yeah, no, that's another one of his sort of Christian studies. Slightly more interesting though, because he talks a little bit more about slightly more transcendent subjects and things like prophecy and stuff like that. So a bit more to it. Next to that we have Patriarcha by Robert Filmer, which I think is possibly, oh, it's not the oldest because there's some other stuff, but definitely one of the older texts anyway, that's rather nicely reprinted by Imperium Press. I guess from 15, is it 1558 or 1585? One of the two.
No, it's from the 1690s.
Are you sure?
Maybe it's earlier than I thought,
I'm pretty
actually.
sure it's 15 something.
Oh, we had a donation there, £2 there from JD saying, and the most important book, The Handmaid's Tale. Thank you for the donation there, and
Yeah.
very, very funny.
Published
Oh well.
posthumously in 1680, but probably began in the 1620s. That's at least according
Okay, well.
to Wikipedia. I know, Wikipedia, boo, but
1680, okay. Yeah, because it just about predates a lot of the or is contemporary with some of it, a lot of the Locke stuff. And Patriarcha, basically, you end up with people like Locke, and you end up with people like Rousseau later on, like furiously trying to debunk it.
Well, that's what John Kamenos in chat has seen. Filmer wrote in the 1600, Locke's work was a response to Filmer, which is why in Patriarchy you've got like Filmer, then Filmer's response to Locke a number of years later, which is quite interesting. I mean, I just like the fact that for a book that is that old, there are a number of very realist sort of specific lessons that can be drawn out of it. However, I don't want to draw everything out of it now because it's something I want to look at in
Oh
future
no.
and make as
Yeah,
part of a much bigger thing.
Sagan doesn't read Patriarcha. I've not read Patriarcha. I need to, but my favorite thing from your description of it, and I've read bits of it, is Filmer basically going, "Where's the state of nature, John? Where is it? When was the state of when was man actually free, John?" It just, I don't know, the idea of him cutting like a wrestling promo and saying that the state of nature never existed is kind of a funny concept to me. But But we shall move on.
Next to that, we have probably one of the first based books I think I bought myself, The Abolition of Britain by Peter Hitchens, which I think you can still pick copies up for like 3, 4 quid. I think people don't realise how popular a book that was in the like early 2000s, and how I think it is really probably again something that's fundamental to the view a lot of us have that we maybe don't pay as much attention to as we did before. I think
It's.
it's definitely a book a lot of us have got here from.
I think Abolition of Britain is incredibly important because looking at it, it is one of the few dissident political books from a right-wing perspective that isn't just like high Tory moaning.
Yes.
There's a huge like wealth of stuff from the 90s and 2000s that the Mises Institute has produced and collated. You've got stuff like Higgs, which is technically from the 80s and has been reworked and revised since then. You've got a lot of the later Rothbard stuff that we have, the Harper stuff, but really there isn't any of that in Britain apart from Abolition of Britain. There's stuff starting to
We've
come
got you've
about
got people like
now.
Scruton.
Oh yes, I'm gonna say apart from like Roger Scruton, like Scruton and Hitchens are really the only two I can think of
They were
offhand.
definitely the water bearers of British conservatism for quite a long time,
Yes.
that's for sure. No, I always, and I think I mentioned it before, it's the chapter in Abolition of Britain on TV. And honestly, I think in the process, I think I read it on the train, I think possibly to yours or on the train back. Maybe the train, you can't quite remember.
I remember you sending me the pictures of it.
I just like I read the chapter, and from the start of the chapter to the end, I was like, yeah, fuck TV, get ban it, get rid of it, it's terrible. He's so anti-industrial society, and I didn't quite realize at the time, and now I do.
I think a lot of people find it a little bit quaint these days if they've come to it from, say, harder tomes. But it is a great foundational work to pick over and pick points out of. It's something I actually used relatively heavily, even though I only did one quote from it. It's something I used relatively heavily for my speech for Shieldings last year, because it is one of the few pieces we have of like anti-modern Britain, really. There's very little of it, which is
Yeah,
a
the
bit
JD in
dire,
chat's
but.
talking about Crime and Punishment, or I think the other it's called the Abolition of Crime or Abolition of Justice or
Yeah.
whatever it is. That's meant to be rather good as well, and it's one I should probably pick up at some point. Next to
Yes.
that, we have a very weird one you found again. Another weird. Was this not one from like Newfoundland Library or
This
something?
is from a Newfoundland library, and it was £7 delivered.
Yeah. Hardback cover of The Illusion of a Conservative Reagan Revolution by a guy called Larry M. Schwab, who I can find nothing about.
He doesn't exist apart from this book, but
Nah.
what this book is really just a whole bunch of statistics and receipts about the fact that the Reagan administration was in no way conservative.
I remember reading through this at one point, and it was like he's trying to say about like how there wasn't a revolution in social stigmas and culture, and he uses the example of the number of parents of or was it GOP members that would be happy for their children to be taught sexual education. It was like
Yes.
85% said yes. I'm like, damn, things really just don't change.
It very much is we codify the teaching of sodomy at 10.
Next to that, we have C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity, which I think it was one Radlib told me to read at one point, and I kind of got, but also wasn't as receptive to as I was to some other Christian works. But I think for people who are maybe questioning on stuff like that, that might be useful. We have a book next.
I hate to say it about Mere Christianity, but Mere Christianity is a book for midwits. I'm sorry. It's a book for like 12-year-old, like teenagers and people who need something that's a bit more basic. Because having read it as like a 12-year-old, I was like, well, that was pretty good. But having read it as an adult, it does not hold up, in my opinion. If you have any kind of theological basis, it's a bit patronizing, honestly. It's very hand-holdy and it makes a lot of hand-wavy points that might seem clever to certain people, but I just think are a little bit lazy. But a lot of people love it. It works for some people, so I'm not going to denigrate it any further.
Then next to that, we have a small little almost pamphlet that is still hardback cover, mind, I was given from a stall in Stirling. It's Herculobus or Red Planet, and they were basically like Nibiru Planet X conspiracy type people, and they had their stall set up, and they were playing like weird, like Gregorian chanting music, and I don't know, I just went up and asked for one of their books.
You've got to get the sketch stuff. It's at least entertaining, and it's at least something you could draw on for, I don't know. A lot of that stuff's interesting for fiction,
You'll never see
so.
another copy of that anywhere. Anyway, that's all I'm saying. We'll quickly blast through these last ones here. That's
This
just
is the normie corner.
that's just some book from uni. That was another cheap one I picked up from, oh God, by the Oxfam place. Darwin Awards I've had since I was a kid. I think I picked it up when I was like 11 or 12 out of some big, massive second-hand bookshop near. It's just an area outside of Warrington, but it's big. It's quite a big, famous one, and it's all insides, all like 1800s architecture and furniture and stuff. I got that for some silly cheap price. There's a copy of George Orwell that my dad gave to me at one point when I started reading stuff, which is probably half the reason why I'm doing this stuff now. And then we have Why Nations Fail, another uni economics book.
Which is not a very good book.
Now, where do we go now? Oh, right. We're on to Jess's side.
Will say we'll get onto Jess's side of the bookshelf, yes, because there's a lot of interesting. Start at the top or the bottom?
I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm just going to go left to right, as I
Yeah.
should have probably done with the first one. There's Confessions of Saint Augustine, which is a book I should probably know more about than I do.
There's a couple of unidentifiable books there, but
Yeah, I'm not too sure what the thin one is there. Heretics and Orthodoxy by G.K. Chesterton, which Jess said is rather good. We found this big one in one of the charity shops in Bolton. It's like a massive, like 700 or 800 page collection of short stories by, either based on or mostly by Chesterton.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It seems relatively interesting. There's a rather tatty copy of Joseph Conrad's The Secret Agent, which is, I think, another second-hand book find. Which I think Jess has been reading a smattering of different Joseph Conrad stuff. I really want to read the one that Apocalypse Now is based on, because
Heart of Darkness, yes.
yes, I've watched that film too many times not to have read that book, and will endeavour to do so at some point. We have one that was quite hard to come across because it's the full unabridged version, but Savitri Devi's The Lightning and the Sun.
This is the hard. It's a beautiful hardback edition of this very spicy book. But if people like, it's kind of funny that I remember when AA saw a picture of our, not even this version of our bookshelf, the previous version of our bookshelf that wasn't this full. He was just picking out stuff. He's like, "Wow, that's incredibly spicy. I'm not quite that brave yet."
Well,
So
yeah, I
we
think this is something along the lines of using a lot of the language and not theories, but symbols and myths from the Bhagavad Gita, and Bowden quoted, "She's a bit much." No, it's an interesting book because it's not. I don't think it's quite how people what people would expect from it, and its
it's more
connection.
esoteric.
Yes, its connection to National Socialism nowadays is not one that necessarily Devi was trying to create back then.
No.
I don't know, people are saying it's a bit much, but I would imagine it's very similar to Evola. I have to admit, I've not read it myself, but
It's
from what.
a it is a bit cringe LARP in places, but it's again it's at least interesting and it's something you're not going to be able to get for very long, so get it where you can.
There's a copy of Dostoevsky's Demons, which I'm trying to remember. Is this the one where the two guys are uni students kill their mate, and then the rest of the book is them having to deal with the ramifications of not getting caught and the guilt and whatever
Think so,
else?
yes. I
I think
think
that
that's
might
the
be that
one.
one. We have a copy of Alexander Dugin's The Fourth Political Theory, which according to
Which is a bit of a
Jess,
slog.
which according to Jess was like really rough, and then you get to like the last 20, 30 pages and it's very good.
I imagine part of that is the translation from Russian to English.
Possibly, I considered that as well. Then there's a smattering of Evola books, A Revolt Against the Modern World, Men Among the Ruins, and Ride the Tiger. As far as where Jess has read all of those, I've only
she has yes.
I've only read snippets of Revolt and Ruins, for bits and bobs of different things. Again, it's another one that I will find.
You
at
have
some
read
point...
Ride the Tiger, though, haven't you?
Yes, I have read Ride the Tiger. I will at some point find, you know, some 3 week period within which I can just read through the two of them of it at great length. And then, of course, next to Evola, you would put your nice leather copy of the King James, the Fifth Holy Bible.
Jess got that. That's not mine.
No, it's the one from a really nice shop in Bolton, I think, actually. It's like an entire Christian literature shop. Then there's Hermann Hesse's The Glass Bead Game, which I have to admit I really do not know much about. I believe the next one after that is Samuel Johnson, the major works. I think he's a poet and...
A famous reaction image?
Yes, yes. he is the famous reaction image guy.
Yes. Next up we have Monsters from the Id by E. Michael Jones, which is quite an kind of an interesting one about human fears, psychology. It is Monsters from the Id. I've not read it, but I just
It is also E. Michael Jones. It suits being in the same row next to Savitri Devi. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
No, some of the chat saying, is Devi worth reading? Literally only heard Goober say good things about her. I think everybody's worth reading. I mean, as we will get to the lower part of this row, I'm just going to skip to it. One of the books, Imperium. I mean, previously I'd only really seen people reference Yawkey that put me off Yawkey. Yeah. And then I sat through and read it, and I thought, actually, this man's very reasonable, and his idea
Yawkey
of
it's not for guys.
Not only for guys.
Yeah.
But no, like, because I think his idea of race is an incredibly sort of elitist one. He basically says that there are general abstract races of people that we can pick out and look at for the sake of materialistic or science reasons. That's all very well and fair. But there are only a very select few men of race, as he describes it, which is this sort of idea that you either in, you know, in combat and politics and the ability to develop a further or continuation of high culture are continuing either the high culture of your people or the political or military supremacy of your people throughout your life. And that is you exhibiting that you have that man of race characteristic, which I think is a lot more interesting than heard there, let's just be racist. And I think furthermore, he's sort of idea of understanding the place of, shall we say, the Jew in European history is also rather interesting, in a sort of sense that he sees them as like a, in a certain sense almost, the different advanced kind of people that appeared, that were in a different state, in a different place, sort of culturally to Europe, at least according to Yawkey. So they'd shucked off a lot of the kind of classical restrictions that an early high culture has on it, and were felt free then to engage in money and lending and business in a way that some aspects of either Latin Christendom or sort of pre-Latin Christendom Europe hadn't really come to terms with. So that creates this whole different dynamic and makes them seem like an alien culture within Europe and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it is the actual sort of groundwork you would have to do to understand what happened in Germany in the 30s and 40s. You know, it's so you don't just have the accidental view of history style that Rothbard would talk about, where it's like, well, one day there was this nasty guy called Adolf, and he just went and killed them all.
And then, for no reason at all.
Yeah.
it's literally the antidote to that. I've not read it in its entirety, but I've read extended sections from Imperium. Same with Decline of the West, we see next to it as well.
Mm. I was going to do the left and right, because otherwise we'll skip over. There was some great fictional stuff, and again, this is some of it I would like to pick through at some point as well, because there was Ernest Jünger's Storm of Steel, and then recently we got Yukio Mishima's Confessions of a Mask.
Yes.
Which are both meant to be fantastic reads. Then there are some of Jess's favourites, I know. Oswald Mosley's The Alternative and Tomorrow We Live.
Yep.
And then next to that is a sort of weird one. Is it narco-fascism or something? Which is some weird...
Well, you skipped over the The what was that? Poetical works of the Pope or whatever?
Oh no, I obviously I hadn't got to that yet. I'm looking at the Nielsen one.
Oh, okay.
The next one is the Political Works of Alexander Pope, I
Oh,
believe.
sorry, I missed that one. Yeah, an archive. It's not very good, that one, apparently. It's almost like a pamphlet. We just got that because it looked interesting. Again, we all of us try to gravitate towards stuff that is very anti-mainstream and has a good chance of being banned.
I can't
So,
remember who wrote the anarcho-monarchism one.
no, and again, not recommended. Not very good.
This Time the World by George Lincoln Rockwell. Again, another one of
Yes.
Jess's that I have to, I'm not
One
extremely familiar with.
of the great friends of Malcolm X, Commander Lincoln Rockwell.
Too true.
Both of them wanted to send them all back to Liberia. So, yes.
Legend of the Sun and Moon, which is again another one of those weird sort of just second-hand books. It seems to be from, I think it's the early 30s, but it has lots of really nice
Are we
hand-drawn stuff in it of, I
talked
think,
about Declaring the West yet?
I think I skipped over it. I did say it's a sort of, or you mentioned earlier, it's sitting next to Imperium. It's
Yes.
an abridged copy. I think at some point we will try and get our hands on some proper
Get the full
copies.
thing, yes. The full fat version. But yeah, I'm not sure what that book is either. It's again, it's a charity shop find.
Shakespeare, Ivor Brown. I believe that's referenced in a book we're going to come to again by Pavarotti.
Yes, by
I don't know. I
Niemann Panini.
see because I at least took a minor interest in Shakespeare in school. It's one of those things. If I see an old Shakespeare book, I'm like, oh, I've got to grab it. And that's in like as a hardback book that's very old. It's in such a striking yellow still. It's quite cool.
Again, this is a mix of, like I said, there's a whole other bookshelf over there that has stuff like my fascination with the Russian literature of the guys who wrote Roadside Picnic. Because there's a lot of other stuff that we own too, but it's a lot of this. Like I said, this is our deliberate reading of more kind of alternative or distant literature and esoteric and strange stuff we found in charity shops.
Yeah, which is
It's a good mix of both.
why next
Yeah.
is like an ancient version of Penguin Publishing Plato the Symposium, and then Homer's the
Yes.
Odyssey, which I have to admit, I've not read yet. But again, it's another one of those things. If I see something that's either old looking or one of the classics in a charity shop, it's like, well, might as well pick it up. I mean, why not? I'll zoom in a little bit. I think, oh, that's too much zoom.
I'm not sure what's next to that. Is that The Problems of Socialist England?
Yes, that's a problem of Socialist England by De Jouvenel.
Yes.
Then we've got it's not John Hunt, it's someone else. I can't quite remember, but The Ascent of Everest, which is
Yes.
the whole story of Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay going up in the 50s and all the gear
Very
they
famous
took.
book. A lot of people own it. You can get it very cheap. Very good book. Excellent book, actually.
Then there's another weird one, The Projection of the Astral Body. I couldn't tell you where that's from originally or how it got printed or how it got made, but it's just some weird book from the 50s on astral projection that I found in a local like antique shop. But why not? There's like £2, gotta have it.
Somewhere I do have a complete works of Shakespeare as well. People mentioning the chat.
And then
There is other stuff. I think we found the pure theory of politics kind of just shoved here because nowhere else it would fit.
yes. I mean, the thing is we did at one point organize stuff by author, as you can tell by the way like all the Hopper stuff and the Mises stuff is in one section, but like the bookshelf we have is a slightly weird height. So like taller books that are in, say, oh, not this one, but this section if I zoom out, which
Yeah.
we should move on to next. Some of these are slightly taller, so they don't fit in the other shelves. I also find it
No.
kind of funny looking at this image from the way I've taken the picture that these books look quite small, but some of these are huge.
No, these are massive. These are full-size books. Some of these are like almost, well, some of these are like A4 size books. Manual of Political Economy is nearly an A4 size book. It is fucking huge. these are big boys. We have our second copy of Ride the Tiger. This is a two Ride the Tiger household.
Tucked in between, I don't know if these two books could be any more me. We've got technological slavery by Kaczynski, which, if you have read the manifesto and thought, this is interesting, please go and grab that book. Because the other little bits of his writing that he has and the letters that he writes to other people are all, they are all just interesting with the stuff, just as interesting as the stuff that's in the manifesto. I see John Kamenos, what's the best Evola book to start with? As I recommended earlier on, The Bone Club, I reckon.
People were talking about what's the Cinnabar one? I've not read that one. Can't remember the name of that book. Someone else made a recommend because that's been asked a few times. The Path of Cinnabar has been recommended to me a bunch of times, but I haven't
Yeah.
actually read it. And we should probably get that one as well.
Next to that, though, A Ride a Tiger, we have a book that I don't think a single person in this chat is going to know. I don't think anyone else knows of
This
this book
was
other
very
than
famous
me.
for a while, though. These were very popular books in the time period. Yes, this is by Cummins Beaumont, if I said that right.
Commons, I think it's pronounced.
Cummins Beaumont, yes. And it's called Britain, the Key to World. We bought this for your birthday, and this was like 60 quid for the hardback. Not a very easy book to get hold of, but it is an interesting book. You go on and explain it because it's one of our skits books.
Yeah, it's kind of like a it's it actually involves a lot of similar things that Reverend Robert Taylor is talking about in regards to biblical history. However, he takes it a step further, and that it's not just about astral theological symbolism. The real thing that you can decipher out of the Bible story is that the Britons are the real Israelites, and that the story of the Bible actually happened here. And it's why we have loads of places that actually, in many ways, maybe do or do not, sounds very similar to the names of the places they have in the Bible. I don't see no forests in Israel, that's all I'm saying.
Well, Britain, the Key to World History is a funny one. A lot of it is, though, there's a lot of the stuff in there that talks about the fact that really the Bible story could have happened anywhere and that
Yes.
a lot of cultures could appropriate it. And the fact that it's been appropriated to this single location might not be one, the only fit, and two, the ideal fit. And that's a very interesting concept that most people aren't prepared to deal with mentally.
Well, he did some of the chats, it sounds like some Anglo LARP, but it's not actually because he is talking about pre-Anglo-Saxon Britain. He's talking about, what people describe as like proto-Celts or Celtoids or the Thonic people. Yeah, Goibenoon chats like, so Jerusalem, but unironically, like, yeah, why do you think the second national anthem for England's called Jerusalem? But no,
It's again.
there is some more stuff in there that would have been completely speculative, or would have seemed very speculative at the time when he was talking about Doggerland, Great Flood, the different periods and many ice ages. It's one of those things that like people seem to be very sure about that before the 1900s. Then we forgot about it all, and then 10, 15 years ago, people rediscovered Doggerland, it seems.
Yeah, and there's all these places we're not quite sure how old they are. We're not quite sure, a lot of monumental architecture that just seems to be planted under the sea that we're not that's been deliberately destroyed by wind farms, all stuff like that. So,
Let's.
agree or not, skits or not, there's at least an interesting read, and it's something you won't come across in your everyday
No.
travels.
Next to that, we have Pareto's Manual of Political Economy.
Which is a very, I didn't realize how dense of an economics book it was.
Yes, I believe this is a lot more technical work. However, I think there's probably a lot of useful stuff to grab out of it, and it's one of those things where if I was to be doing something in regards to economics writing nowadays, I think I would come back round to something like that just to see what he has to say.
Plato is very important, but there's like two or three things that the mathematical economists and the market economists in quotes take from him, and they leave the rest alone because Plato's not very conducive to the modern narrative of economics. Well, again, people saying, "Oh, amazing how this work isn't mainstream." They talk about Britain, the Key to World History, but yeah, political. Manual of Political Economy isn't mainstream, and a lot of the stuff in it, despite Plato being quoted so often by quote-unquote modern economists, from reading some of it and reading episodes of his other stuff and generally researching Prato and his thought process and his theories and his totalizing, you know, what he thought of the world in totality, he is bastardized heavily by modern economists who really pick up, you know, the Pareto distribution, ooh, the 80-20 rule, that's really it. And they basically shout at people for looking
Yeah,
at his
they
thoughts
draw
about
a production possibilities frontier and go, ooh, look, it's Pareto optimal. Ooh.
Now the collection in general is a great testament to the fact that there is a huge parallel, not only way of thinking, but history of the world
Yeah.
out there. And one in which is made in extremely cogent and interlocking arguments throughout a lot of this work.
Whilst my brain remembers what they are, that blue thing on the top there is Alexander Adams's little pamphlet on Towards a Based Barbican. And then that weird crumpled thing
That was
that's
his
hanging
speech at
across.
Shieldings.
Yeah. No, that was the one he was going to write for the Nomos event and turned it into something else.
Okay.
That little crumpled black thing, I believe, is actually the program from the first Shieldings
Oh, okay. That was the program from
event. Then we
Children's
have
One.
the, as you said earlier on, the slightly poorly made, really bad PDF rip of
Of
Mind and
my.
Society that has someone else's like pen notes like pasted in the, you know, it's like a version of the book that's been used and underlined in pen, scanned and then printed again.
It's not the best version, but it's serviceable and it was cheap. And you can tell it was cheap, but at least we didn't spend too much money on it. So that's all we can say about that version of Proteus Mind Society. Again, I think it's called like the General Compendium. The Compendium of General Sociology is the one that everyone keeps recommending to me, but it is like £1,000 in hardback. So we'll get there at some point.
Next we have Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler by Anthony C. Sutton, which I think is a book everyone should read.
Do we have Wall Street and the Bolsheviks in physical
We
form?
don't, I think we only used PDFs of Bolsheviks
All
and the
right.
FDR one. We should probably pick them up at some point so we've got them all. Just because those are books that would get banned very quickly, I think, if they were to really lean on them, because it's one of those ones that you have either come across Anthony C. Sutton on some weird web blog 15 years ago, or you've never heard of him.
He was so important to a lot of the democratization stuff. He was like that missing kind of like keystone piece, because he comes to extremely similar conclusions as people like Rothbard, people like Sam Francis,
He
you know,
got
people.
them receipts.
Yeah, he does. People like Burnham, but he does it through a purely historical analysis, which is an amazing thing to do. It's a shame he went a bit skits in his later years, talking about cold fusion and stuff. But yeah, his trilogy of Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Wall Street and the Bolsheviks, and Wall Street and FDR are amazing. They are vital and they interlock very well. So.
Yeah, next up we have The War on Gold, which is one I have to admit I've actually not read through at all. It's one of the few books in here I don't think I've taken a look at whatsoever. I can't really speak of it. I could probably take a rough guess though. I would imagine it's much like
It's
a
very
lot of
what the fuck
the,
happened in 1971.
yeah, also a lot of the kind of Mises articles about, oh God, when did the, you can get the Sutton trilogy on Amazon for £25. That's not bad. No, a lot of the articles on like Mises.org about like the gold, what's the word? I want to say gold grab, but that's not really the right term.
Yeah, basically, I know what you mean, though.
I don't know. We'll move on to the next book, which is a great one, and one that I'm really glad I picked up, to be honest. Antelope Hill's The Sovereign Collection was a, which is a collection of Carl Schmitt's political theology, the concept of the political, and study on, oh, I can't remember, partisanship or a study on the partisan, which is his, you know, theory of the political is the stuff where he talks about friend enemy, political theology is the stuff where he talks about sovereignty, and then he links the two of those in the partisan, where he discusses how people like Lenin and then further Mao took both of those concepts and run them to like their logical extreme, and engaged in, you know, the total war and the war against all war and all these different sort of concepts, so that they could engage in civil political war across their entire nation and get as many people involved as possible in the conflict.
Well, I'd say Carl Schmitt's Sovereign Collection is actually quite a good companion to some of the Sutton stuff, because Sutton actually shows in practice how this worked.
I suppose it's an example of where you can see, as what Schmitt would refer to as the exception.
Yeah. By the way, Carl Schmitt's Sovereign Collection, you cannot find that on Amazon.
Is it not there anymore?
It's completely gone.
It's a hardback as well.
Yes. If you can find it somewhere, do get it. It's a very good printing. It's got unabridged versions of all the essays. It's very hard to find stuff online from Schmitt that isn't completely bastardized. Mm. A lot of it is either deliberately bad translation or it's leftist sources basically calling him a naughty, naughty boy in the margins.
Yeah, but you've got to remember the wide and diverse range of opinions that were prevalent in the NSDAP in the period.
Yes.
Next to that, we have another one you found. I mean, it must be one of the mintest copies of Beautiful Losers out there.
It's new old stock.
Mm.
It's from the US. I think this is the only, like, copy. This might be the only copy of Beautiful Losers in the UK.
I think AA might possible. Have a copy. I'm not too sure.
Oh, yeah. AA, like, us and AA have Beautiful Losers in the UK, and that's basically probably it. Because very few people have it in the US. It's very difficult to find. We were very lucky we found the new old stock version on Amazon, and it is a collection of essays by Samuel T. Francis. And it's wonderful. It's so good.
we did a... I suppose maybe we could not describe it as much and refer people to our video we did a little while back, stream we did on two essays. We looked at the one on MLK and then the one where he draws rather heavily from elite theory to discuss equality as a political weapon, which is then the essay that Rothbard focuses on his review of the book and the Rothbard-Rockwell report that we used with Tho Bishop when we went on a quick trip through the Rothbard time machine.
Very nice. Mitt owns a copy as well, so well done. We went through the Rothbard time machine. There's a whole like interlinked lore with like the history of the channel. When we talked to Tho Bishop about it, it's like we've been like blessed by like the ghost of the you know where that actually came from, bringing it all back around? It came from an exchange of ideas program by Chronicles magazine that partially led to Gottfried writing what he did.
Yeah.
Which
it's also what brings the influence of Rothbard into Francis, which he talks about in the rather large book we have over there that we'll get to in a minute.
the magnum opus.
Next to that we have Suicide of the West, which talks about liberals and liberalism and is really talking about a much different set of things. It's almost like the not in Ride the Tiger, but the Ride the Tiger from Evola describes the opposite sort of man, because he's talking about the differentiated man. Whereas in the Bow in the Club, I can't quite remember what it is. Philosopher Cat mentioned it the other week. But this sort of notion of the man that's trying to escape sort of reality and the real world sort of conditions upon him and a number of different things. And it's this sort of weak capacity for achieving basically nothing and only ever, you know, getting from sort of other people's rewards, claiming them as your own, all sorts of nonsense like that. Just the kind of things we think of as like a shit modern attitude are summed up in that book. And he posits that this sort of inner weakness will be one of the things that fuels the destruction of the West, either as it falls apart from inside or the Russians have a go at us. And some of the prediction stuff's a bit kind of like silly and seems a bit odd. However, I suppose it probably made more sense at the time, because I believe he wrote that in the 50s. And that's really what put him on the register of what became the paleo-conservatives and Buchanan and stuff like that at the time. He was this kind of weird guy. He was a Trotskyist. He wrote the Managerial Revolution. People are like, that's kind of interesting. Then he goes and writes this scathing book that basically says if you're like anti-discrimination, if you're pro... trying to sycophantically help the poor people and all these different things. You're basically just the scum of the earth, and you are going to destroy your own nation.
It's great seeing the progression. We don't actually own a copy of the Managerial Revolution, which we should probably get at some point just for completeness. But honestly, it's a bit redundant in some ways. I'd recommend reading it in PDF form, but it really is just like a starting point. The Machiavellians and Suicide of the West, reading them in that order is a good way to read them. Then read Leviathan and see if you can actually just like expand your mind like a fractal.
Not sure has just made himself a member. Thank you very much.
Thank you for becoming a Venus bro.
Mr. Gilded Not Sure.
Yes.
Next to that, we have Essential Political Writings from Thomas Carlyle.
One thing I will say about Suicide of the West as well, yes, it did pick out Burnham as a member of the Paleo Conservatives, but it also basically excised him from political canon from that point on.
Oh, yeah.
People talk about Suicide of the West like they talk about... I'm trying to think of another example. They talk about Suicide of the West like it is like a step too far, like almost like it's Mein Kampf in some circles. People hate that book. Oh, Managerial Revolution is good, but don't read Suicide of the West. That's a racist book.
Well, no, I think we were talking about it the other day, where he's got like the section on like the liberal hatred of the ghetto.
Yes.
Where, I can't remember quite what language he uses, but the sort of waifs and strays, the wastrels, the scum of the earth types will eventually, coalesce in if you have a town, a certain subset or a certain corner of that town will be run as like a sort of ghetto by the lowest of the low. And that the liberal can't accept this because it's a real, or at least the liberal to Burnham can't accept this because it's a real depiction of inequality. It actually shows that some people are happy to live in less. So they have to smash this thing up and disperse it across the entire city. And he uses New York as the example. And it makes everywhere else worse.
JD gets it, he said. And instead we got Dinesh D'Souza as our reward. Happy days. Dinesh D'Souza is a poo in lieu.
Anyway, next book is Thomas Carlyle's Essential Political Writings, which I think is probably the cheapest and easiest way to get into Carlyle. There is some fantastic like hardback collections of like his History of the French Revolution, which at some point I would love to read, but that's like a task in and of itself. I think if you just want to understand Carlyle at his most basic and the real foundations that he's writing everything else from is all contained within the different works in here. So there's the stuff on hero worship, the Sign of the Times, which is him writing about mechanics and technics as early as like 1840s. I mean, I remember reading this and thinking it was hilarious that Carlyle basically wrote from the time he was in his late 20s right through his death in his like late 80s. And from that, he saw the world going from like the 1820s right through to nearly the 1900s. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the sort of the changing world he viewed, and partially why he was only really able to write a work that he did, especially when you get into the later stuff, like the discourses on Niagara and all these different things about questions of slavery and the poor and democracy and all these different things. It is very much one of the, I think people would refer to as a core sort of reactionary text, despite the fact that Carlyle is not himself a reactionary. He's a reformed sort of liberal, as I think many people describe him.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, JD. I tried, Sagan called Carlyle a crypto-leftist and I nearly burst a blood vessel.
Well, no, because he's one of those people a bit like Spengler and some of the other thinkers from the sort of mid to late 1800s, where because they were writing on a number of different topics, they get attributed with, it was the mainstay of the theories of absolute monarchy and also National Socialism and also Chartism and, some people think his commentary on the worker is about sympathy to the worker, and some of it's very clearly not, and it's like, oh no, you've just read that really badly.
Yeah, he basically goes around calling people indolent in quite fancy ways in some sections.
It has memes as well. He's the original ship
Yes.
poster, as AE describes him. It has these
People
characters like Bobus the sausage maker, who's just this like shyster, and he puts forward this imagery of him just stuffing whatever he can into a sheepskin and selling it to you as a sausage because he's taken over by the worship of Mammonism.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Razor Fist calling Ted Kaczynski a leftist. Oh God, we really need to get better people.
I think next to that we have arguably the tomiest of tomes.
It's like the dictionary plus two. Oh dear, it's
Yeah,
so big.
the scholar's edition of Rothbard's Man Economy and State with Power and Market, I think it's about 1,500-1,600 pages in total, and is
The Scholar's Edition.
a bit like Human Action sort of works in a certain way. I think there's probably not a subject he doesn't talk about, especially in regards to things that are either economics or politics. I'm sure there was a snippet
It's
in
also a
there on
book you couldn't
anything.
drop near a small dog without killing it, so.
No. You drop that on a floor, and anyone within about 3 feet gets a swollen toe.
The walls shake. Very chunky boy. Nice hardback though. Very nice. Again, how much did you pay for that?
I get that shipped from America for less than 30 quid. And I think
That's very good.
it's from some I think that was another US library one, actually. That was from a university library, and it must have been like one of the only universities, because this is a copy from the 90s, I think. It's mint, mind you. Because obviously nobody's taken it out. But somebody at a university in America in like the early mid 90s went, oh, we'll need a copy of that. Bought it, probably spent a fortune on it. Sat in the library for, I don't know, like 2 decades, and then I bought it. And now it
Again, a
sits
lot of
there.
our stuff is ex-library finds.
However, the one next to it isn't. I paid full
No,
whack
that
for that one. I
we did, but it's gone up in price again.
die.
That again, a book that will be worth a fortune in a few years.
I think I paid nearly £34 for that. I think
It's
I.
currently like 40, so.
Yeah. But it's. Yeah, I can't remember. Is it. I can't remember what the WSP publisher is at the bottom. I thing is that this, I look at Sam Francis completely differently to a lot of the way a lot of people do, because my introduction to Sam Francis is not Beautiful Losers, it's not his writing for Chronicles or anything like that. It's this. You know, that's. I think I started reading that over 2 years ago now at this point, maybe?
You were the first person I ever heard mention Leviathan and Its Enemies. When you were reading that, nobody knew what it, basically nobody apart from like people like Pedro Gonzalez and the Chronicles people who wrote the introductions to it knew what that was. That book was brought out and thoroughly buried until a lot of people in this community realized what it was, partially through your activism for it.
I
It's
honestly can't remember
so
where
good.
I think it was Edward Welsh, the editor for Chronicles. I believe he still is one of the editors or main editors and contributors. Mentioned it on a podcast with AA, like ages and ages ago, just out of the blue. He was like, oh yeah, there's this book, Sam Francis Leviathan and Its Enemies. I don't know what convinced me to go and buy it, because it.
It's expensive.
Well, not just that it's expensive, but it's a very high level book, and I'm not really. I don't know really what drove me to purchase it. I just know that I did, and since reading it, I haven't really looked at anything in regard to politics in the same way since, really. It's, you know, if you've done the Machiavellians, if you've read the Managerial Revolution, if you're at least familiar with either a conservative school or a libertarian school, or I think even a traditionalist school of thought, you could pick
Yeah.
that up and learn an unending amount of lessons in it. And again, it's one of those books that I can just come back to repeatedly and repeatedly and go back to a certain section, a certain chapter, a certain topic in the index. I'm like, ah, right. You know, there's.
The funny thing about Leviathan, its enemies, is in certain sections, it almost is like Hoppian Leninism. That's the funny stuff. It's so good. It takes the best of what Burnham learned from being a post-Marxist. And that's probably why it's so similar, because Burnham was a post-Marxist in the way that Hopper is a post-Marxist. So it has that
Somewhat.
less, somewhat, yeah. It has that kind of lessons from the left set, you know, tone to it. It has that good stuff that Burnham has, but like taken to its logical conclusion and then like expanded into four dimensions in some
That, and he
areas.
also spends great lengths to further explain and respond to secondary literature that's been written about the managerial revolution. You know, because the guy in the chat the other day was talking about John Kenneth Galbraith. That's one of the people he responds to amongst all sorts of different other people. And I think as well that what's the original story is that it was the manuscript is from like 1993 or 1994, maybe 92
Started
even.
in, they think, and it
Yeah.
was worked on right through to his death. And it was basically discovered by his estate. And I believe it was Paul Gottfried who rescued this.
I think it's some other people actually.
All right.
It's the person that wrote, not the foreword, but the person that wrote the introduction. Name I can't.
Okay, so it was him. I know there was a foreword by Gottfried in it, isn't there?
Well, he writes the appendix
Oh,
and
okay, all right.
essentially writes about the relationship they had over Burnham's writing and the disagreements they had, and the fact that they both came from a more European school of elite theory. So they ended up continuing the debate between them that originally started with Mosca and Pareto, where I believe is it Mosca was the one that tried to suggest that ideology basically doesn't matter, and that the contents of the ideas means nothing, and it's all just power and function. And that was the line that Francis took, that it was all, you know, it was all organization, it's power, it's technical sort of prowess, ideas are ancillary to this. Whereas Paul Gottfried takes a slightly different line, and obviously the best thing to do is read both of them. Best thing.
Yes, there's an interesting fusion there, and you can say it depends what level of the machine you're looking at. Because not to get too far into the weeds, we will move on in a sec because we've got quite a bit more to look at. If you look at activists and mid-level technocrats, the stuff that Gottfried makes is very vital in analyzing those people. But if you look at the apex, the actual global thin strata on top, the peak of the eye on the pyramid, then Leviathan, its enemies, and Francis's way of looking at things is the only way to explain how those people behave. Anyway, that's enough waxing lyrical as we usually do about Leviathan, its enemies. If you have any kind of grounding in theory whatsoever in this area, go and read it. And if you don't understand it, go and read some other stuff, then go back to reading. Go back to reading it. If you understand it correctly, it will change your life. I'm not like understating that.
Yeah,
It's
I
for
think
me too. It is.
the one thing that I think we are most missing from the collection of stuff here we is Gottfried's work, but that's because all that stuff got printed in the 90s, was quite popular, and is now hen's teeth.
Well, we have the thing is a lot of the stuff we don't have here, we have copious amounts on PDF. I've read Gottfried's stuff. I've read it a couple of years ago, actually, because he's one of the people I got into earlier. And I read, oh, what is it called? The one about Marxism he wrote actually is one of the worst ones I wrote. It's really good, and like the curious vanishing of Marxism, I think it is. Gottfried is hard to find in physical copy, and we need to get After Liberalism because that's still easy to find. But it's something we've collectively read, I think, or at least read most of, and it's not something we are rushing out to buy right now, just because partly because of space, as you can see. But I think Gottfried's ideas are quite well known and they're quite well talked about at the moment.
Whether or
And
not
again, a
people
lot.
know it, yes. Because
Yes.
when people are talking about technocracy, they are implicitly talking about a lot of the drivers that drive the therapeutic state as he sees it.
Yes. But to move on to another book that I haven't actually read yet, but I want to, is another, it's our second Robert Higgs book, which is going to be quite vital, I think, to if we do more democratization. Depression, War, and Cold War is very good because from what I've read of it and the sections I've read of it, it is one of the few books that basically goes into the fact that the Cold War doesn't real in some ways, and that the idea that both sides were genuine, hard-headed enemies about to push the button at each other is laughable. And the play acting of some of the, you know, the depression and the war, where you have the Soviet Union on American life support throughout that entire period. And then you get into the Cold War and they are this invented enemy in a sense. Depression, War, and Cold War also is good with economics from what again, I need to read it in full, but I'm looking forward to reading that when I get time to read it fully. Again, it's Higgs, he did Christ and Leviathan. Good thinker, pre, you know, late 80s, early 90s, a lot of his stuff. So yeah, very good nuts and bolts kind of Mises Institute, Austrian School, tangential historical analysis stuff.
And I think that brings us on to the last section.
Yes, this is the last. There's a lot of stuff here, but I know someone mentioned earlier, if you're still here, here is The Art of Being Ruled by Wyndham Lewis, one of our newest editions.
Yes, this is one I'm very looking forward to reading to. And then below it's the book I read rather recently, Shakespeare's Moral Compass by Panini
Nina Panini.
Pavarotti.
It's like, from the bits you sent me, it is so AA. It like drips AA-isms.
Yes. Yeah, between that and Suicide of the West, you have half of AA's chat-up lines.
What's below that then?
Below that is Otto Weininger's Sex and Character, the book we referenced the first half of in the discussion with Philosopher Cat.
Oh yeah,
I know the other half of the book is him basically bemoaning women
Weininger.
and saying that
Weininger, sorry.
Saying that women are Jews and Jews are women and stuff like that. I'm not this Ford Wingate or something, whatever this is. I'm not too sure what that book is at the bottom.
Christopher Sykes.
Yeah, that was one Jess picked up. I'm not really too familiar with it.
I'm not sure either. I don't actually know what that is. Sorry, we're drawing a blank on that one. That's one of
Yeah.
Jess's books.
Under there is a very small copy of Vladimir Lenin's State and Revolution, which is again another great one if you want to get into Lenin. The terrible reprint of Karl Marx's Das Kapital, but then again, there is no good reprints of Marx.
Yeah, it's it. I
Because there are
remember
no
that
good
was quite
prints of
ex well,
Marx.
it was quite expensive for what it was as well. That was like 6, 7 quid, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it turns out the communists are very bad at giving people their literature.
Yeah. It's also because of the fact that I don't think Marx wanted anyone to actually understand what he was writing.
Yeah, it's very, it's a rough sit.
Under that we have a lot of the Rothbard books nowadays. The easiest way to get them is in the big reader versions,
He's a big reader, guys.
which is slight pain because like they basically almost dwarf the full size, like not full size, the big cigar human we have
Yeah,
sitting next to them.
that is a cigar humidor for scale. Quite not a small one either. It's not tiny. So that should give you some idea of how big these tomes are. That's why they're down here.
These two books are great. I credit these two books with a lot of my just surface level understanding of intellectual subjects on a whole, because the wide variety of thinkers he talks about and both draws insightful knowledge of, whilst also being like, isn't this kind of interesting? This person was involved in this, and oh, they came up with this idea, and also happened to know these people. Isn't that funny? And it's a shame that I think these are some of the last books Rothbard wrote, actually. Or the first one took quite a number of years now, anyway. So the second, and then they got halfway through writing one that was going to go from Marks all the way through to Keynes and then never quite got it finished. I could only imagine what it would be like if someone actually took that project, finished it off. It'd be amazing, but
They
it's
might
kind
have it
of.
in the vault somewhere. You should ask nicely when you're at the
But it's
Mises
also one of
Institute.
those ones, if someone was to take it and finish it, you wouldn't have his style. You know, it wouldn't be Rothbard. Because both of these books together are 500 pages each. So it's a fair read. But for what is a book about economic thought, it's a page turner. Because it just loads of, there's just loads of
I
interesting
found them
stuff.
extremely readable when
Yeah.
I used both of these as foundational elements for the early parts of the Democratization series. Because looking at how the first thing they attacked when they wriggled their way into the power structure was the money. They knew what to do, and they went straight for the economics, and they went straight for the boring stuff that people don't really understand. And what Rothbard does here is extremely good at unpicking that stuff and showing you how vitally important seemingly neutral mechanisms are. He's very
Yes.
good at disassembling the lie of the neutral state in terms of its economics to an extreme, like granular detail degree, where it becomes undeniable. Excellent for that, both of them. I also just love the sideswipe of economic thought before Adam Smith.
Yeah.
Because I love the whole thing of like Adam Smith invented capitalism in like 1710. Nobody traded anything before Adam Smith.
Yeah,
Just like Locke invented freedom.
1775 or something. He wrote Wealth
Yeah,
of
just
Nations
like
and.
Locke invented freedom. No one was free before Locke.
And under those two is also another big reader copy of Easy Reader, The Ethics of Liberty, which I understand it gets treated as a meme book, and I can see why people do treat it as such. But I don't know. I'm willing to give it a little bit more respect. I still rate. A lot of the libertarian literature is at least as a way to get yourself grounded in one whole consistent political theory. You know,
Yes.
it almost sort of gives you your own neutral point from which to measure and compare other stuff with. And I think there are still points in there that are interesting, and I think at some point maybe as a
That's
counterpoint.
funny.
As a counterpoint to his discussion on the ethics of like children in it, that we should probably do an investigation of what happens when you don't have a complete and total sovereign right over your children.
Yes. There's a lot of expandable stuff. There's the guy who does, defending the indefensible,
Water
which
block.
is, yeah, Walter Block stuff, which is a great kind of going, look, this is why this stuff exists. It sounds stupid in the abstract, but what he's talking about is the extreme corner cases generally, and when things break down, and the absence of government, and in some cases, almost the absence of society. And how do we deal with ethics in these extreme circumstances? How do we deal with ethics in the abstract when it comes to having a complete system of thought and then taking it to its logical conclusion? And I think a lot of people just can't deal with that. They just go, "Who do children markets?" When those do it, have you heard of private adoption? Like, it exists for rich people. Yeah, that's funny. Not sure saying that Bronze Age pervert called Rothbard a planet, which is hilarious for a White House advisor, who came out of nowhere to essentially fart on the pages, and become some sort of darling to call someone else a plant.
But heavily workshopped and marketed by Mike Cernovich for a number of years.
Yeah. That's I don't know. I think if anyone who studies 90th Rothbard, his wilderness years, where he writes like just the fire that is stuff like Program for the Populist Right, in which he basically tells people to go out and kill your local drug dealer. Anyone who studies that stuff from Rothbard and his interchanges with the paleoconservatives and essentially immolating the last acceptability of his legacy to try and get them to do something against the neocons. There is no way you can see that man as any kind of limited hangout. He goes so hard in the 90s and it basically destroys him. It's kind of sad reading some of his stuff in those days because it's almost pleading. Like we talked about his review of Beautiful Losers. It's basically him going through and talking about his ideological defeat in some ways. But again, looking at the camera as we talked about in that episode. But we should move on.
Yeah, we have a copy of D.H. Lawrence, Women in Love, which I think Jess went on a bit of a D.H. Lawrence binge at one point because it was sort of advertised to her as a reactionary writer, which he is in some kind of ways, but is also just someone that wrote a lot of weird stuff in the 30s or 20s and 30s that was meant to be kind of like plating.
Yeah.
I don't really know too much of him, but I'll pass to that, to be totally honest. Then there's a
We
copy
have
of Mine.
sandwiched.
I was
Yeah.
excited. A sandwich that says "Mine Were of Trouble" by Peter Kemp, which I believe is his recounting of his story in,
Spanish Civil War
yes, yeah,
is Mine
Spanish,
Were of Trouble.
yeah, fighting on the
I need
side
to
of the
get the other two.
Francoists.
Yeah, I need to get the rest of the Peter Kemp trilogy, but I want to read that one first before I get the other, because we're so like I. Th That was the tail end of me just buying all the books, and I we need to read them first. Yeah,
Hey,
Mine Were of Trouble, No
I'm
Colors,
getting
No Crest,
a good
Armed for
way through
Oblivion. Yeah,
the
are the
stuff I've
three.
got. I think I've got to a point where I've read most of everything that's in the bookcase. But no, the next thing we have is again charity shop find. I think it was all of like £1.50, and it's basically like a 900-page collection of like all of D.H. Lawrence's stuff. Below that, we have two copies of the Shieldings Events book because we're just that cool.
Well, we're both in it, that's why.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Boom. I spoke at it. Oh, we can't say that yet. I spoke at it last year. And your essay is in there as well. So there's also a picture of me as Bart Simpson as Rat Boy, apparently.
Yeah. No,
I look
you
like.
look like the jazz music stops guy.
I do. I do. It's not the best
I might
illustration of
have
me.
to. Give me
Oh,
two.
dear me. No. No.
Too funny.
What else do we have here? What's
Have you?
that black book on top?
It is the Buddha's Book of Daily Meditation. However, it has a lot of really nice, like different hand drawings of like flowers and stuff like that. So it's just like a, you know, you would have like your Bible passage for the day kind of thing. It's essentially the Buddhist equivalent of that. I'm trying to imagine it can't be too far.
I keep making the joke, yes, and I made it at the cathedral as well, that in like even like 10 years' time, this all coalesces into some kind of actual giant political force. That there'll be thousands of people who claim to have seen like that speech at Shieldings. It'll be like the first Sex Pistols gig or something. There's already people who claim to have been at the. Oh God, yeah, that does not look like me. Jazz music stops.
You say what?
I do look like I'm some kind of mulatto in that picture as well. Really do.
Isn't mulatto Justin Timberlake?
I do look like mulatto. Oh no. Yeah, very Malcolm X.
Anyway, yes, we have the Buddha's Book of Daily Meditation. It's Christopher Titmus, whoever he is. Then we have like another. Again, there's a lot of these are just like local charity shop finds. I mean, the Spiritual Approach to Astrology by some guy called Loftus from like the 70s or 80s. An early edition copy of Fingerprint of the Gods by Graham Hancock, which is probably going to be an interesting read when I eventually get round to it, but I just think like I already know about the Commons Beaumont stuff and nothing's going to get that skits. Graham Hancock's basically like a limited hangout compared to Commons Beaumont. Shut up, you keep talking about Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. What about the standing stones in Scarabray?
Very, very skits.
Then we have a book on one of the, I think one of the highest accredited Luftwaffe pilots, Adolf Galland. It was in like one of the local shops for like £1. It's like, well, semi-interesting World War II history book and a Luftwaffe
Yeah,
pilot, why not?
I think he's the most famous ace of that period.
Under that is some old book from the 50s on machine drawing and design.
Oh, yes. I need to read that one, actually. That's probably relevant to me, being as I am what they would refer to in that period as a draftsman.
Yeah.
So.
Then there is, I'm just going to zoom all the way in here just so we can see these. The
Yeah.
International Motorcycle File from like the 70s, which is some like magazine almost. Political Theories from Rousseau to Spencer by Archibald something Dunning, who seems
Yes.
to be an interesting character and was in around America in. Oh, I was writing between the 1800s and early 1900s. I think this book itself is originally from the 1920s, but this one is a reprint from the 40s. So I'm quite interested to have a look at it. And this book and these two below it came from the same Oxfam in Stirling, because the two
Oh,
below
those
it
look
here,
great.
yeah, Parliament Past and Present, Volume 1 and 2, are a two-volume set of the history of the British Parliament from the 1500s right through to the 1920s roughly, which is
Some
the time that
beautiful,
which
yeah.
is the time these two books are from. I believe these are from 24 or 25. I think for these two plus that I paid £10.
You got them so cheap. These are beautiful books, beautiful illustrations, big, almost like coffee table size books. They are
Yeah.
very, very nice things.
And then just under that, the last thing we have is again a local find, the National Trust Book of Great Houses of Britain, which is just full of loads of really nice. When I was saying to you, it's something you probably couldn't even make before or make now because the cost of colour printing. Be
It wouldn't be economical. Yeah.
full size, bigger than A4 square prints of stately homes in Britain and some of the big manors and this, that, and the next thing. So it's just like a really nice object, and it's something you wouldn't get anymore. And I think it's originally from like the late 70s, because the note inside where it says the original price of something like 40 odd pounds, because these two alone were like originally sold for like 40 quid a go as well, or something like that. Or
They were sold for 80 is a set not too long ago, it looks like.
yeah,
So,
but this
good
one
lord, you got a good deal
is from
there.
the late 70s, and just inside it says, like to such and such, I hope you enjoy this book. Happy Valentine's 1979 or something like that. And it's like,
Yeah.
fair enough, it's like someone's old book that they've chucked away, but like that's, someone gave that to someone as a Valentine's gift, like nearly 40
It
years
might.
ago.
Yeah, it might be somebody who died, so.
It probably is. But I'm thing is, I'll go back to the larger picture. I'm willing to accept that a large number of the books we have in there that predate, like the, I mean, some of them are from the 40s, the 50s, the 20s. Probably all like belong to old people that died, and then their stuff ended up in the charity shop.
Yes.
I mean, I
We
think if
do.
anything, it's a good thing, because otherwise these books would, they would never see the second life that they are receiving now if it wasn't for us coming across them.
No, as we've encountered in our Airbnb travels, it looks like charity shop books get bought in bulk by people to fill up wall-to-wall shelving to make it look like they read. Because as you can see with this collection, apart from some of the more speculative like picks that are esoteric from charity shops, this is a theme, a very deliberate collection of books. Again, I have things in my collection like a very nice coffee table, like hyper nice illustrated version of the Silmarillion.
Well, do you not have is it Churchill's History of Britain in like 12 volumes in different
I no,
boxes?
I have the four volume version of A History of the English Speaking Peoples by
Ah, that's
Winston
it.
Churchill, which is actually quite common. I also have an old encyclopedia set, which is very nice, called Pictorial Knowledge from the 1950s, which is lovely.
But if we were to take all those ones that are in boxes in separate places, we'd need another bookcase about this size for them.
Yeah, we may be moving at some point in future. So I actually have got an extensive book collection of fiction and nonfiction of all kinds, from very scattershot places. So they own quite a lot of Bill Bryson. I talked about Douglas Adams. I obviously own quite a lot of Tolkien and some nice versions of the less known Tolkien. I mentioned my big Silmarillion, which is one of my favorite books, but I also have. I have like a weird collection of books on volcanoes and volcanology, and geology. I have like a very bizarre book collection from my own like previous days. Bill Bryson, not sure, wrote kind of like entertaining books about kind of science, engineering, and traveling around Britain. It's very twee, almost hairy bikers core kind of tone.
Oh.
It's quite nice though. As in, it's just pleasant.
I
It's just kind of
suppose
like
the only
pleasant
additions,
Britannia.
as you mentioned, just the fact that there is just lots of like odd stuff on this table, on a table on this bookshelf. So there's like all your fancy stone collection. And if anyone wants to buy about a 25 centimeter by 15 by 10 centimeter block of
It's a
rose
massive desert rose.
desert rose quartz, gives a shout. There's some loads of
Yeah.
Polaroids. Both there and there from Yazin, who's in the
Who's
chat,
in the chat? Yeah, thank you for
who takes
those.
very nice pictures at events, both like Shieldings and Nomos. Hey, look.
Yes,
And then
for
there's
sure.
my I'm just gonna hoard a collection of the Austrian magazine so that at some point in like 30 years' time I can sell, oh, here's every single Austrian magazine since like August 2021.
Yeah, not your thing. There is like random books I got for Christmas. Maybe at some point as a follow-up to this, I'll go through, or at least show on social media. Not that I'm on social media. Maybe I'll put a community post about it at some point about my normie
Or
books.
people
But
can come find us on our Telegram if they don't already follow us
yes, I'll act. What I'll do is,
there.
since you're shilling here, oh, the Telegram's not in the description of this one for some reason.
You sure?
Oh no, it is. It is. It's the second link. I'm being blind. Yeah, we do have a Telegram, so do check that out. We're trying to steer clear of a lot of more mainstream social media, to be honest. We have the YouTube.
That and I just don't want to be beholden to Twitter and its standards.
Yeah.
And also the way that it makes you interact with people and have, I don't know, you end up with, you either are part of the weird Twitter clique or you are not. How it is at the moment, it seems.
Yes, but that's all going to come crashing down at some point, and those people will be atomized from each other,
But
unfortunately.
that's a conversation for another day.
It is.
I'm just glad that there is at least 40 or so folk that were willing to tune in and listen to us babble about what's in our bookshelf for about 2 hours or so.
I think a lot of people will find this in retrospect. I know I've got a few messages from people saying they couldn't make it today, but they want to watch it in future. So, this is, I guess this is very useful for our core audience who are very interested in the research that we do. I know there's been a few people just absolutely crying out for this, and we're very happy we're doing this. So, thank you guys for all your support. Thank you guys for being so interested and being so eager to research yourselves. You know, there's a lot of people here that have done a huge amount of reading already, who are coming along with us on this. You know, it's not easy watching a lot of what we do. We've been doing a bit more kind of punditry and trying to prime people for what's to come over the past few months, but we will get back into some of the heavier, like democratization style stuff.
Yeah, it's just it takes a lot of time, and I think we have treated the period we looked at with such or enough of a fine-tooth comb that if we were to continue on, we want to excel that, and that takes
We do.
time and it takes a lot of work, and I think people understand that anyway. So, I mean, I know there's people who still haven't caught up in the original democratization stuff because they are
Reading
trying
around
to
it, yeah.
yeah they're trying to read along with it. Which basically means it takes the year and a half of reading it took me to do to get you there in the first place, but hey
It's
ho.
still ticking over though. It still gets like 100 views every month, most of it. So the only other thing I want to share was the Substack. There's nothing gone up there recently, but they will be over the next few weeks. I've written a big piece. We're going to split up, I think, and develop a bit further into a series of like a practical guide about how to build successful, or at least ones that have a chance of being successful, distant organizations, and kind of the nuts
Yes.
and bolts of that. But you were right, it needs separating out, so.
Yeah. No, we will. That's something we will sit down and plan amongst ourselves, and probably, even though it'll be in several pieces, we'll probably just put it all out at once it's done, as like a sort of serialized thing, maybe.
Yeah, we could do it. Just you're right in that it's got a few too many stems that don't go far enough into the detail. But it's nice to have stuff, you know, to have a dearth of content like that. There's quite a few things in the background we're developing in terms of written content, which may or may not turn into something bigger. We're not sure, but
Yeah, I mean,
there's a
There's definitely stuff I'm working on that now has time horizons of over a year, but that's just because it's something I don't want to waste where my sort of brain at is in regards to a lot of the material we've read because it's still somewhat concurrent. So I want to spend a lot of time reading secondary material around that so that I can turn it into a bigger, better thing at some point.
I'm going through the same kind of phase you are in that I'm trying to do as much reading, and like note making as I'm reading as possible.
Yeah, I mean,
Because as I try to, you
we
know, I was
also
hoping to
just
do like,
have a lot of other stuff going on.
Yes, we do.
I'll be at the Mises Institute in like less than a month from now, so I've got some reading I need to do before that and other preparatory stuff. I'd really like to write an article for Hat's thing that he wants to do at some point in the next month or so.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. There's one book I forgot to mention, which I have a very small
Oh.
book of winter poetry by Mr. Well, that's his pen name, Benjamin Affer, but Mr. Panama Hat that I actually got him to sign last time we saw him. So, no GC, we do not do this full time.
Well, I think
So.
I'll be honest, I think I probably put more hours some weeks into the stuff that we are doing than some people would who work serious jobs.
Oh
I
yeah.
just don't get too much of a return for it as
Like
all,
you say.
but it's something I'm kind of happy to do, and I mean that's part of the reason why I want to make it into bigger and better things, because then ultimately it's a product that either I or we can sell. And if I want to actually try and create some form of writing career, that's got to be the way you go about it, it seems. So, I mean, I'm happy to continue
Yes.
doing this. If people want to support us more than they already are, then that gives us a bigger budget for books and gives me, you know, it basically makes it more justified for me to use my time on this stuff. So, I mean, it's not necessarily saying that people like pay me to do this, but if people put more in, I will try to get as much out of it as I can.
I'm gonna say, I'd say your primary time is dedicated to this album, but mine cannot be, for I am very busy and I
Yeah.
work a quite an intensive full-time engineering job. So
I
I'm
still have an important role as a homemaker.
yes, you do. Anyway, thank you guys for
Homemaker and a
watching.
Jess Wrangler.
Yes, you are homemaker and Jess Wrangler. But thank you guys for watching. I'm sure at some point will be nerdy enough to go through my mineral collection. But yeah, that's the overview people have been asking for. I'm going to put a quick document of, I think, the most important stuff we have in there. There's a couple of ones I missed. I'm going to put those up, but I'm going to put out a community post, and like I said, that'll be linked in the description. So if you guys missed anything, don't worry, it will be in the description. If you're watching the VOD. So thank you guys, and I will say good night.
And I will also say good night, and I will say watch out for the stream we'll be doing on Thursday because we will have a special guest and it should be rather interesting.
It should be, yes. Anyway,
Goodbye.
good night.